Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I now have more Cadbury eggs than are reasonable for me. Michael, what should I do with
this?
This
is surprising.
It's so nice of Tamara.
For you, it's the Halloween candy effect and the gummy bears effect, which I just think if something's in front of you, you will devour it. So you're not going to go through those?
I don't know. I mean, they're tough to eat. They're very sweet. They're very good. I feel if I eat a bunch of those. Big Nigel, can I interest you in about 20 Cadbury eggs?
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I had no idea that would be the open. Last night I ate two of them. This is a tremendous mistake. I drank wine and I ate Cadbury eggs after a full meal.
How's that stomach feel?
I'm going to have to cut back on something, and it's not going to be the wine, so it's going to be the Cadbury eggs. Michael is here. Nigel is at Nigel's place. We have Leon Harris later. We have Jeff Passan later. It enables me, an actual open enables me to get through some of the email, not in the email section, just certain things that are particularly special. I want to thank Bob Davis in Youngsville, North Carolina, for a game, a box game called Wilbon Bingo, in which you check something off every time Wilbon, for example, disparages D.C. or mentions Mike Ditka or talks about, you know, where he ate or tells us which house he is at. Or mention Chicago. It's a wonderful game.
The doctors he knows.
Yeah, everybody he knows. I won a Ted Blake in Medford, Massachusetts. Ted Blake and Kara Carpenter announce the newest little Jonah Richard Blake. 8 pounds, 10 ounces, 20 inches. That's a big baby.
Yeah.
8'10 is a
that
big
was
baby.
Walker size.
And Ted said his parents expect him to share an affinity for old orange bald yodelers and unlabeled Chinese meat. It says, our hospital room overlooks the Charles River Harvard campus in Boston skyline, but it's been raining, tell Michael, so I just did. A birthday wish for Hazel Marie Corcoran, who turned one today, April 29th. And that's from Pete Corcoran in Winterset, Iowa. On April 29th as well, Nikki and Dennis DuPont in Kansas City celebrate their 25th anniversary. So that's very, very nice. They thank me for, they said they saw me first from the sports reporters. That's an awfully long time ago. That was in the 80s. So happy anniversary to Nikki and to Dennis. From John Stadola, 72 years old, Gonzaga, class of 65, Notre Dame, class of 1969. Addressed to Mr. Former Writer of Skill. You started a story Monday about Bill Murray's book. It's Bill Murphy, not Bill Murray. And then dropped it. Like it had COVID-19, right on to hello from Juan Williams. What about the book? Did you like it? Did you scatter the pages across your lawn? Don't keep me hanging on. Inquiring minds want to know. The book, as Michael can attest to, is over my right shoulder. I have not read it yet. I thought I might start reading it this weekend. I have not read it yet. If it was Bill Murray, I would understand why you were, you know, anxious to hear about it. But it's Bill Murphy. It's not Bill Murray. So anyway, this is something that Michael can help us with. And this is from Chef Mark Murray in Wappingers Falls, New York, which is up in the mountains, baby.
Now he's a pro.
Yeah. It says, we're going through trying times. My other half spent time in Brooklyn working with COVID patients and is now 90% home and forces me to stay not six, but at least 16 feet away while I listen to the show because he cannot stand the sound of your voice. Can't win them all over. Though one day back, Adam Ferrara was on the show and I heard an audible laugh out of him when he was forced to listen to the pod on a road trip, but I digress. So through these trying times, I look forward to notification on my phone that says the pod fairy, a.k.a. Nigel, dropped a new show for the littles. I started to listen, Tony. So anyway, the other night I watched something. Michael, Tiger King, Tony. No, I don't know what that is. And here's where the begging begins. Please, if you love all your littles, watch Tiger King and give us a full review. Take copious notes. I understand this is a lot to ask, but the payoff will be the best Tony Kornheiser show ever. I didn't think I could laugh louder than the amazing segment 15 years ago with Wilbon talking about his mom and cruise ships to Alaska. But if you watch Tiger King on Netflix, comedy gold will ensue, guarantee. What is Tiger King?
Well, what are your thoughts on big cats?
I don't like any cats. I'm a dog person.
It's really impossible not to try and spoil this if there's a chance you will watch this. But let's just say you had a very distinct personality who decided to open up his own private zoo. He's currently in prison.
He's in prison.
And they're sort of looking back at what led to his being imprisoned, including an ongoing feud with a social activist named Carol Baskins, who may or may not have killed her husband, by feeding him to the rescue cats.
Wow. Wow.
I'm not even mentioning his
So this is not a this is not a kid's show.
I mean,
I just assumed it was a kid's show.
It has adult themes. I wouldn't say it's inappropriate, but it's mostly just absurd about the realities of life outside of your I-95 corridor.
But it's not a cartoon.
Oh, no.
I assumed it was a cartoon that Bootsy watched.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. All right, so maybe I'll get to it. Is it worth it? Is it good? Oh, yeah, that's what I thought Daniel Tiger was, Tiger King.
No, so, oh, yeah, good connection. No, I will say it makes you actually pay attention to some of the laws around big cats, but you wouldn't believe that private individuals would have hundreds and hundreds of cats around the country.
I would not.
And I'm talking about like personal use cats, and they're breeding them to then sell to other private individuals.
No, because then it becomes a wet market like bats, and then we all get another virus. I don't want that.
Do you know how they're feeding these cats?
People?
So apparently what he would say is you go to the Walmart, you go to the dumpster, right. And all of the meat that individuals would take through the checkout lane that they then do not purchase, Walmart would not put back on the shelf, so they would be dumping out nearly expired food or perfectly good food, and they would dumpster dive, feed that to the cat, and that would be the bonus that he would then give to all of his employees, so they would eat well.
Nigel, do you know anything about this?
Yes, I've heard quite a great deal about it, and that was a perfect description of it. I have not yet watched it because I fear I will enjoy it too much, and I feel just sort of like, you know, rubbernecking in a car accident, but everybody says it's brilliant.
Okay. Well,
Nigel is the Tiger King of Northwest D.C.
I should say, by the way, about Michael made a comment about paying attention to the laws. You know, Vice President of the United States of America goes to the Mayo Clinic and doesn't wear a mask. All the doctors, all the patients, everybody wears a mask. And he says, well, I don't have it, so I don't have to wear a mask. You know, it's like, you know what I mean? Use the code. I mean, come on.
At least to the elbow high five.
Come on. Wear the mask. You and George Stephanopoulos, wear the mask. It's okay. Wear the mask where it is said to wear the mask. One other. This is fabulous. This one is so great. This is from Jared Burley, a dairy nutrition consultant and farmer in Muncie, Pennsylvania. And he writes, imagine my surprise as I was listening to the podcast while milking cows this morning, only to hear Dr. Ron Porthauser make reference to the fabled flying veteran of my youth. The man you're talking about is Doc Watson. James P. Watson was a Wayne County, Pennsylvania legend from Mr. Tony's summertime stomping grounds in Orson, Pennsylvania. The fact that somebody is listening to me that knows who the flying vet is so amazing to me. Although I was too young to remember, he actually landed the helicopter on my parents' farms on many occasions to make his veterinary calls. He actually started as a nurse and then moved over to veterinary medicine because, as he said, people lie, cows don't. He actually appeared on an episode of the game show To Tell the Truth as the world's first flying veterinarian, Information for Life. Sadly, Doc passed away in March of 2018 at the age of 99. I watched this guy. His house, which I don't think was a farmhouse, his house was less than 1 mile from where the camp was. It was right on Route 370 in Orson, Pennsylvania. It's just amazing. Should the email make it on the air, it would be my second appearance. As I wrote you a few years ago, I'm the dairy nutrition consultant that does the rations for the cows Mr. Tony saw when he was at camp, like the Medvedev farm, right there, a dairy farm. Now, whenever I see these cows, I imagine I feel much the same as he does when he sees David Aldridge on TV. Thanks for keeping the pod going. For farmers like me, it has been business as usual during the pandemic. People still need to eat, and the cows don't have an off switch. Having the podcast to listen to while working is one of life's simple pleasures. Stay healthy and tell Chessie, my giant Bernese mountain dog, say hello. This is an amazing, right?
No,
Michael,
I was flying
small
Doc
world.
Watson. Was he the inspiration for the wedding airplane?
No, I wouldn't. Well, he was a helicopter guy.
I know, but that still might have just...
Yeah, maybe. Maybe there was something triggered in my head to get congratulations, Liz and Michael.
Yeah, you could have announced Color War at our wedding.
Yeah, it would have been great. Nobody would have understood it. So that's just remarkable and makes me very happy. There's a couple of things I did want to talk about. One is food supplies. They seem to be dwindling. I'm certainly in favor of keeping the meat and the chicken... processing plants open. Michael was informing me today that when they just arbitrarily kill these animals rather than send them to market at a no profitability, what do they call it?
Depopulate. Nothing to see here.
Depopulate. No, you're killing the animals. You're just killing them. I mean, it's just.
Can I read a text message from you? So I'm
yes.
I'm trying to do some of the shopping for mom and dad. I head out to the Safeway where I've had a lot of success since we've been back. So I say, Dad, I'll try and pick you up some pork and chicken because that's primary concern number one. He writes, I like chicken thighs and split breasts, not so much skinless, boneless, but I think bones make them taste best. Pork chops, if available, only because, you know, I go, no chicken or pork. And he just writes back, ooh, it's already started.
Yes. This is what happens. There is no reason to fear that we will run out of food because we make more food than anybody makes food. We don't get the food to you in the way that we should. And there is understandable concern and near panic when you have coronavirus outbreaks at the processing plants. I understand that. But you shut them down and you clean them as quickly as you can. But then you get people back to work at 20% or 30% or 40% of capacity, not 0%. You don't. The choices is what this was my feeling about Adam Silver and the NBA. The choices aren't 0 or 100. There's a lot of things in between 0 and 100 that you can do, because not only do you have to keep people hopeful, but you have to keep people from fear that something terrible is going to. Let the pandemic be the terrible thing. Don't let the lack of food be the terrible
thing.
Right,
and you look at the effect of when I go down the grocery store aisle and I'm seeing people approach every employee saying, where's the meat? Are you going to unpack more meat? And that's the trickle-down effect. And you talk about how much food we produce. A lot of this comes back to the Tom Friedman piece you were looking at.
Great
with
piece.
Our relation to what we're harvesting, and particularly as Americans, our attachment with the idea of meat, the whole meat and three ideology around what dinner needs to look like. And you look at all those processing plants where you've seen the numbers shift, where you've consolidated, so you have fewer and fewer. You still have all these farmers and ranchers trying to get their meat to these processing
That's
plants.
Right.
And you see the idea of being a butcher is now not as skilled or as valued as it used to be. And even the butchers that you'd have in the stores who could break down that huge side of meat to get it
they
onto
can do
the
it.
Shelves.
They know how.
But those workers are being redirected to other portions of the store where it's deemed more important to try
Hickman's,
and get
baby.
The stores open.
Hickman's.
So yes, a place like Hickman's, or you have specialty butcher shops in every city. Those are the places you need to be looking at. And, you know, I look at my own shopping. I don't need to just go pick up a thin strip steak that I can cook quickly. I can try and pay attention to, when do we want it? I'm going to get a higher grade of beef if I can afford it.
And that's all fine. Just don't hoard.
Don't hoard.
Don't hoard.
You look at the practices.
Use the code.
How much meat, how many pounds of meat are currently frozen because it was supposed to be sent out of the country or is going to be redirected to restaurants, and we don't have the capacity to safely handle that to get it to
And
consumers.
We don't have the chutzpah to understand what we're doing, right, Nigel?
Absolutely, yeah.
One other thing I wanted to say, Dustin Colquitt was cut yesterday in a cap move by the Kansas City Chiefs. He had been the punter of the Kansas City Chiefs for 15 years. His younger brother, Britton Colquitt, had been the punter for Cleveland. He was cut a few weeks ago. This is the first family of punting in the NFL. Like the Mannings are the first family of quarterbacking. Their father, Craig Colquitt, was a punter for 9 or 10 years for the Pittsburgh Steelers, has 2 Super Bowls. Each of the kids has at least 1 Super Bowl ring. They had an uncle, or a cousin rather, Jimmy, who punted at one time for the Seattle Seahawks. Why am I bringing this up? Am I terribly sad for Dustin Colquitt? No. I mean, he's made a good living and he's got a Super Bowl ring. His last game was Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl victory. I'm bringing this up because their uncle, Tim Davis, is a guy I know. He played tight end at Auburn, Tim Davis. And at number 12 at Columbia Country Club, he once had an albatross, which is the hardest thing to do in golf. I just thought you would like to know that. Right, Michael, your eyes lit up.
Well, he's also responsible for the outdoor chairs that we use as
that's
fine
right.
dining out at the beach.
That's right. That's furniture salesman. And he's a friend and he's a good guy. And he is their uncle. So we'll get out
can
of
I
here
ask,
now.
What? You know what an albatross is?
Oh, an albatross is a double eagle. On a par 5, it's a 2.
Shot heard around the
world. It's the rarest.
Wow.
Jimmy DeMarit had one. Right? Gene
well, the
Sarazen.
One you're thinking of is Gene
Sarazen. Gene
Sarazen
had the most famous double eagle. It's an albatross. And I mean, it's blind luck. But it's fabulous when you get one. So we had one at number 12. I just thought I'd mention that. We will get out of here. Will Leon join us when we return?
Yes, that's right. Leon Harris.
Okay, wonderful. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Okay, so one of the people that now sponsor us is Old Spice. And Old Spice is a deodorant and a cologne that goes all the way back to my youth. And prior to that, Old Spice is a really, really good brand.
I think it brings us all back to our youth.
Yeah, you know, Old Spice is a really good brand. The cologne that sort of, you know, Sailor from the Sea cologne, everybody knows what that smells like. Every man knows what that smells like. Every man knows what Old Spice smells like. Old Spice is a quality product. Old Spice has given me three different reads. One is for putty, one is for styling gel, and one is for pomade. They're all hair products. I don't have any hair. They're all hair products. What happened to deodorant? So I'm just going to read the one for Puffy. Here's the scripted version. There are lots of hair products that can make your hair look good, and I add parenthetically if you have hair. But only Old Spice Hair Putty with high hold, not high heat, but high hold, can make your hair look like a winner. Its matte finish for a well-shaped but not overly styled vibe will get your hair looking like it's ready to teach itself an instrument. Join an up-and-coming hair metal band. Grind on the underground circuit. Sign a lucrative deal with an independent label and help shape the sound of music for years to come. Great job, hair. Give me a hair shake. Old Spice Hair Putty. Great hair always wins. Then I'm supposed to say, your hair says a lot about you, and with Old Spice Hair Putty, you can make it say the right things. The benefits are high hold, matte finish, and well-shaped, but not overly styled hair. I believe in this product. I have no use for it. That's all I can say. Right, Nigel? Do you use it?
I do. I do, and I have to. I haven't had my hair cut in about 6 weeks, so yeah, I need these products to keep my hair in control.
Tremendous for you. Tremendous. Oh, I love that.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called I'm Gonna Leave You. It's sent in by Terrence O'Brien, who writes, my name is Terrence O'Brien. I'm a musician, unfortunately for me. I was told by a dear old friend, Gabrielle, we know Gabrielle well, formerly in Iraq, currently locked down in Ottawa, that I should send in some of my music to give the show some Midwestern Canadian sounds. While it's not yet eligible for Old Guy Radio, I've recently started a vintage, retro, old-school rock and roll project called Terrence and the High Flyers. We put out a few singles in the last 2 months or so, and here is one of them. They'll play us twice. We'll play them twice today. This is called I'm Going to Leave You, and he thanks Gabrielle for turning him on to this show, and hopes it brings some needed lightness in crazy times. Indeed, Terrence and the High Flyers, and they play in Leon Harris from the NBC affiliate locally, which I watch exclusively, Channel 4. Are you still on the same schedule? What is it, 1 week on, 1 week off?
Yeah, 1 week on, 1 week off. The plan being no one person will take the entire team down. So that's essentially how it works. And it's worked out great. And you may have noticed that everybody has got sort of a home setup except me. Doreen, Jim, Wendy, all of them have a home camera and everything.
Wendy's out in the fields.
Yeah.
Last night, Wendy was just outside the whole time talking about how bright it was and attacking camera.
That's because she's like at least two time zones away from us, living at her place out in Rappahannock County.
Right.
She's got the best backdrop of all. The rest of us are just, you know, we got a lamp or two behind us, and she's got mountains.
So everybody is indoors? Nobody is at the studio? You're at the only one in the studio?
One of us is always at the studio because you can't count on Wi-Fi. You can't count on
right.
Right. You can lose if you lose connectivity at one point. You lose the entire show if everybody's is connected online. So somebody's always got to be in the studio.
So I'm watching. I got two. Go ahead. I got two questions. Yeah. I got one about Doreen. Doreen in the 5 o'clock hour. Doreen seems to be. You know, she's not anchoring. She's sort of at a news desk. I wondered what was that about.
Well, what she was trying to do was sort of like, I don't know, bifurcate her week where she would spend some time in the studio and then the evening show she would be at home. When we migrated over to just doing every single show as a single anchor show, it didn't make any sense to bring her in. So now she's doing everything from home. But yeah,
okay,
she was trying to basically cover both bases.
My other question is like, because I get up early and I do watch the morning news. Mm-hmm. The people who are doing the morning news now, they are one step away from looking homeless. They've stopped wearing ties. They've stopped, you know, they've stopped trying at this point. They're like, honestly, I would expect to see them in T-shirts by next Wednesday. Is there...
Well, part of it is we're trying to identify with our viewers. You know, you don't want to separate yourself, right, from the pack. So you want to actually look like the people you're actually trying to report to. So what we're doing is a lot of the biggest challenge isn't what they're wearing. It's their hair. That's the biggest challenge is they can't go get their
yes.
hair done. And that's the thing that everybody's struggling with.
So this is for someone like me, this doesn't really matter. I now introduce myself on PTI as Crazy Old Man in the Attic, episode 45. And it doesn't really matter. But for people on TV for real, like Leon and Melissa Mole and Un Yang and Wendy, this stuff matters. And this is what I wondered about. In the studio, I guess, but outside the studio, hair and makeup.
Yeah.
Does it exist? Do people come over with gloves and masks and do hair? And this is inside baseball, but in television, this is a big deal. What's happening with that?
I'm ashamed to actually have. This is the first time I've ever publicly admitted this, but I've learned how to do my own makeup. And
okay.
It makes me feel. It makes me feel like a man. Really makes me feel like a man.
To apply your own makeup.
putting on my own makeup every single day. And here's the thing, for the makeup artists, they're probably kind of worried because if we can get away with this, then we sort of have obviated them. you've got to do it. It's a necessary evil. You got to do it, because if you don't do it, you know how it is. You look like some kind of a ghost. You look like some kind of a fiend on camera. So you got to at least make yourself look acceptable. But that's one of the things that we've had to do. That was the first thing to go was the makeup artist.
So this is I'll tell this story. I mean, it's not that it's an actual story. I've got Carol doing my makeup.
Uh-huh.
Jackie and Renee do my makeup at the set. Mm-hmm. But Jackie sent over some products for Carol, has advised Carol how to do the makeup. I sit there. It takes about 10, 15 minutes every single day.
Mm-hmm.
She does the best she can. She's not working with a canvas that anybody wants to see. But she does the best she can, and I wouldn't put it on myself. But I will say this.
Yeah.
Yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, I'm watching Handley between 5 and 7, and he's got a giant red spot on his chin. I'm thinking, what are you doing? You got to have hair and makeup. Somebody's got to say, hey, Handley, we gotta make this look a little bit more even. Now, I don't know him, and he probably hates my guts for saying that. But,
that
Leon, you can identify with that, right? You can identify with that.
I wouldn't put the blame for that on the makeup artist. I put the blame for that on the producer. You're supposed to see stuff like
yes.
that and notice it. I'll never
yes.
forget the day back when I was on CNN. This is God's honest truth. Back when I was on CNN, we had an air conditioning duct that ran over the top of the set, and a dust mouse, you know, a ball of fluff fell off of it and landed on top of my head. All right, I didn't see it. I couldn't feel it. Didn't notice it. Somebody had to email me. Some dude from Chicago emails me in the 11 o'clock hour after I had been on the air for an hour and a half. Tells me, what the hell was that on top of your head? And I'm like, wait a second, what are you talking about? And I grab a mirror and I look, and there's this. Then I knock it off, and I'm like, you didn't say anything? The producer's 10 feet away from me and didn't say jack.
You have God. To. You have
Somebody
to.
Somebody from Chicago had to email me that I had a dust mouse on top of my head. I'm like, you had to be freaking kidding me. So, if there's something on Jim's chin, I'm putting that on the producer, not on him.
I just think, I think if you're actually on television, you notice these things quicker than anybody else. You go, oh, my God, look what's going on. Anyway, all right, one of the most interesting stories that I saw in the last 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, the one story that bothers me all the time is when Anthony Fauci says we were at peak a few weeks ago, and Muriel Bowser, the mayor where I live, says we're not going to be at peak till summer, which
June.
Is defined by June 21st.
Right. Yeah.
Summer,
yeah.
That's the earliest it can be.
Yeah.
But the story that I really liked, somebody came on the air, and they talked about how when everybody does go back to work, and at some point everybody will go back to work, the roads are going to be an unbelievable mess as people will go back to cars. They will not use mass.
Yeah.
They will not use mass transit. So the Purple Line, which goes right through Columbia, nobody is getting. Man, that's a fair point, right? Nobody's getting on mass transit for a year. Nobody.
Here's the irony with that. Because of the way of what we're doing right now, they're actually making more progress in constructing the Purple Line.
Great.
Because
Great.
They actually have their construction schedule. They're like, from last I heard, Metro is like about a month and a half ahead of schedule on lottery construction projects because nobody's using the system. So it's kind of a weird, and it's just sort of a weird happenstance where the thing that everybody is going to use is doing great now because nobody's using it. So you're stuck, man. No matter what, the line is not moving. It's going to go through Columbia. You can't avoid it.
I understand. I'm just suggesting that not even with treatment. Mm-hmm. Until we get a vaccine.
Yeah.
I don't think people are gonna sit together on mass transit if they don't have to.
Well, you know what? I think that the mayors and the governors have done such a great job of showing real leadership.
Yes.
That I am willing to basically take their guidance on this stuff. I don't believe, like, for instance, I don't believe if I had to choose between whether or not Muriel Bowser or someone from the White House is going to be a straight shooter about when it's safer to go out, when it's safe to go outside, I'm thinking I'm going to listen to Muriel.
Me too.
She basically is closer to where the rubber meets the road, and she's got a lot more to lose, but she's willing to go ahead and put herself out there. And she's not going to let you go to get on Metro if it's not safe to go. I believe that, and they may be right. I think they're lowballing it. I shouldn't say that. I think what they're trying to do is be protective, as protective as possible about telling people about summertime, planning for summer. They'll probably open things up sooner than that, but it's safe to plan for summer. And as Fauci and everybody who really knows what the hell they're talking about says, it's going to come back. It's going to come back. So how do we get prepared for that? That's the main thing. That's the most important thing. There are other people who are only concerned about what happens on election day in November, and there are other people who care whether or not you actually make it home alive. And I think I'm willing to listen to them.
As am I. I'll get you out of here on this because I know you. The ratings on the Michael Jordan documentary are spectacular because people are so starved. They're so starved for sports. The ratings on the draft. A draft that was basically done in people's basements were the highest ratings ever for something that is highly rated. That's the starvation. So I will ask you this. Isaiah Thomas, what is he doing with Jordan? This is a no-win, Leon.
It really is.
What's he doing?
You know what? I don't know. The best thing he could do is just sort of like shut up and take it. And as I understand it, you may know this better than I, but the stories that I got were that the vote about keeping him off the Dream Team was unanimous.
They all hated him.
Yes, it wasn't like it was just Jordan's choice, right? Did you hear the same things? So he can sit up here and act as though this was something that was perpetrated against him because of one a personality conflict with one person. But that's not what I heard. The story that I got, the stories that I got from people I talked with, was that the vote to keep him off that team was unanimous. And that wouldn't happen for no reason, right? There had to be a reason for them all to want that. And considering the coach was his coach.
This is the backdrop that Chuck Daly couldn't even get him on the team.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted him on the team. What I love most about this is how it makes Wilbon squirm because it's Chicago on Chicago crime, and he loves both people. But Isaiah Thomas has like emerged from the crypt to take slices out of Michael Jordan. Jordan wins this.
Yeah.
He wins
Hands
this.
Down.
Like, and you want to say Isaiah, or as his friends call him, Zeke? What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
No,
right?
Especially because people want to hear from Michael. Nobody's ever said they want to hear from Isaiah.
Yes, that's right.
People want to hear from Michael. We've been waiting for years to hear Michael. He's been very judicious about when he speaks. He's famous for that line about Republicans buy sneakers, too. He's been so careful of crafting his image and making sure that he manicures every single thing you ever hear about him. So for him to come out and actually open up a little bit, that's something that's a demand that's been manufactured by him, and he did a great job of doing it. So Isaiah has no chance to win this fight. He really should just go away. If he's smart, he tries to find a way to do what Shaq has done. Shaq has made himself funny. He's made himself laughable. He's made himself a comic image, a person that you like, even though you have every single reason not to. And Isaiah hasn't figured out how to do that.
Has not. Leon, thank you so much for being on the show. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, right back at you. Take care, man.
Leon Harris, boys and girls, we will take a break. We will come back with Jeff Passan and see if baseball is really going to start. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This episode of the Tony Kornheiser Show is brought to you What are we doing? We're playing music? Fantastic. This episode of the Tony Kornheiser Show is brought to you by the new podcast, Go and See, which is hosted by Malcolm Gladwell, who is my colleague at the Washington Post and has had great, great success. Produced by the team between Revisionist History, Go and See is a six-part series focused on Lexus and the philosophy of Genchi Genbutsu. Again, not Genbutsu, which means that means go and see for yourself. Genchi Genbutsu means bring Bootsy over here so he can play golf in the backyard. An idea that stems from the belief that if you experience something for yourself, you have a better understanding of people and how to create something for them. In the series, Lexus invites Gladwell to Japan to discover their unconventional thinking and processes firsthand. Find out how a Japanese tea ceremony influenced the engineering of a car window. How the sound of an engine is tuned like a musical composition to elicit certain emotions. How understanding samurai warriors' eyes led to a suspension innovation. Gladwell learns that no detail is left behind and that a car company can learn more about cars by studying people. So go inside Lexus's headquarters in Japan, ride along on a top-secret test track with a master driver, sit in the expertly designed seat that actually lowers to welcome you into the vehicle. Follow Gladwell on his journey wherever you like to listen. All episodes are out now. You can get them. Visit Lexus.com/curiosity for more stories like these.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Again, these are Terrence and the High Flyers. This is a song called This Could Be the One. As always with this podcast, the original music can be heard in its entirety at the end of the podcast and is largely better than anything I'm going to say. Michael, if people like Terrence O'Brien want to send in their original music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Jeff Passan joins us now. And we're going to talk a little bit about baseball, and I'm certainly going to ask about the plans to bring baseball back. But there are a few small stories that I wanted to get to first that we didn't talk about this on PTI last week. We were off for 2 days and it was draft week. But there was a small news story, deliberately small, because I think baseball wanted it small, that the Red Sox pretty much blame one guy, a guy who went to West Point, for all the cheating that they had. And Jeff, I wondered if you could explain it to me. My prejudice here is that Rob Manfred is trying desperately to sweep all stories about cheating under the rug as quickly and quietly as possible, and there is possibly more to this. But you are the expert in this. What happened here with the Red Sox?
I think both of those things can exist at the same time, Tony. I think that Rob Manfred desperately wants to sweep every single cheating story under the rug. But I also think that when it comes to cheating in baseball, this was jaywalking. This was a misdemeanor. This was something that was honestly far more pervasive, I think, than the eventual history of Major League Baseball is going to show in terms of discipline. I think if there had been a Mitchell Report-style investigation into all 30 Major League Baseball clubs, you probably would have seen some evidence of half the teams in baseball doing what the Red Sox did. And what they did was have JT Watkins, who is their video replay coordinator, pass along signs and sign sequences to players who then passed it along to guys on second base. I think the stealing of signs in this regard was extraordinarily commonplace around baseball. And I don't think anyone honestly saw it as terribly ethically wrong. That's kind of this weird thin line that you have in cheating in baseball. What the Astros did in crossing it was relay signals in real time to batters at the plate. And that was the breach in baseball etiquette and ethics, I think, that ultimately separates what they did from what the Red Sox did. But what the Red Sox did was technically cheating.
So, yeah, I buy that explanation completely, and I do think that it is far more pervasive than people want to talk about now. But it leads me to something. Alex Cora was on both the Astros and the Red Sox. Alex Cora and A.J. Hinch have been suspended for a year. If there's whether there's baseball or not, they are eligible to come back in 2021. And I am wondering, these are managers, both of whom have won a World Series. Cheating alone does not get you to win a World Series, I don't believe. Do you think either or both or neither will be back in baseball as a manager in the near future?
Yes. I think that either will be either in a managerial role or in a front office at the beginning of the 2021 season. I think there are enough people who are fans of both around the sport, and they have enough friends where there's going to be a calculation. What kind of a PR hit are we going to take for doing this? And when you look at AJ Hinch, the way that an organization can spin it is that this is the guy who smashed a monitor multiple times because he didn't like the cheating. That's, you know, that's the way that the story's been told. It was in the commissioner's report. He's not one of the people who came up with the scheme. You can sell that really easily to the public. And AJ Hinch is very good on camera and I think can apologize his way away and charm his way away. Alex Cora, look, he was a big part of what happened in Houston. And he went out the next year, went to a different club, and won the World Series. But in Rob Manfred's official report, which is what he can point to, he can say, I wasn't part of whatever was going on there. I learned my lesson. And it was obvious that that was the case in Boston. There are very easy ways to sell this. And that really is all the clubs are looking to do at this point. How do we sell this to a public that might be skeptical or say that we are encouraging or harboring cheating, which, honestly, you kind of are. But look, we've seen people who have engaged in bad behavior come back in sports ad infinitum. This is nothing new. It's just a different kind of bad behavior.
Well, that leads me to Jeff Luhnow, who is not as well liked as either Hinch or Cora, and who has, in my opinion, I don't want to say he was the mastermind, but he has certainly condoned cheating on the highest possible level. Does Jeff Luhnow ever work in baseball again? I'm not even going to pin it to become a general manager, because that's certainly possible, work his way back in, but will he ever work in baseball again, or is he toxic?
I think there is a toxicity there that, and that's such a great word, Tony, that goes beyond the cheating. I think it goes to the Roberto Osuna trade, where Jeff Luhnow said, we have a zero tolerance policy with domestic violence, and then said, no, that's domestic violence that's committed when someone's in our organization. If he's coming from the outside, we have a one tolerance policy. It is incident after incident after incident. It's the Brandon Taubman situation. It's the whole culture of the Astros that I think people there right now are working hard to change and are embarrassed by it, but it was something that was fomented with Jeff Luhnow there. And bringing that into your organization is a really, really difficult pill to swallow, especially when he is someone who was totalitarian in his thirst to run the organization. Like, I suppose when you're the boss, you can be that way, but every decision ran through Jeff Luhnow, and he wanted to be the person making those decisions and driving the policy. And that's a tough thing to do when you've had the history that he has.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Let me get to the more pressing news, I guess. Every week or so, somebody at baseball leaks a new plan. First, there was an Arizona plan. Then there was the Arizona and Florida plan. Then the Arizona, Florida, and Texas plan. By this evening, it'll be Arizona, Florida, Texas, and there'll be five more states in this plan. To your knowledge, this is not the question of will they resume. This is not the question. This is the question of if and when they resume, what is it going to look like, in your opinion?
Oh, man, it's tough to say, because I'm not trying to cop out here, I promise, but the state of the nation is evolving so much, and that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, that baseball depends on the state of the country. It kind of does, though. Where the country is mentally, I think,
is a big part of this. Where the country is in terms of illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths is a big part of this. And we have to understand that is changing not on a weekly basis, Tony. That's changing on a daily basis.
That's right.
And so we're left with all these different plans that on one day, one of them may look better than the other, but on the next day, it may be completely different. I think in the end, the likeliest one to get off the ground is either the three-city plan or the five-city plan. In the three-city plan, it would be Arizona, Dallas Metroplex area, and Tampa-St. Pete. In the five-city, it would probably expand to include Houston and Miami. In all of those places, you have sufficient stadiums to play three games a day. In all of those places, you can stick teams in their time zones so that their local television broadcasters can put them on TV at their 7 o'clock hour every night. And that, Tony, is the biggest part of this whole thing. It is local television dollars, and it is ensuring that they have playoff games, because that's where owners make their money. And if owners are going to make their money, players are going to get paid their money. And if players are going to get paid their money, they are incentivized to come back and not do so kicking and screaming, and stomach the fact that they're in all likelihood for the next 2, 3, 4 months going to be in a place that is not their home.
I'm assuming, look, I love this because Wilbon tells me how smart Adam Silver is, and that Adam Silver is the only one with guts enough to say, we don't have a plan right now. And I say, Mike, they have 20 plans. Every sport has 20 plans. You have to be responsible when the green light is upon you. You have to have a plan. So please don't tell me how globally advanced the NBA is, because they're lying to you. They have plans. And Manfred has 20 plans, and everybody has 20 plans. But I don't know how many of the plans include fans at all. Do any of them, to your knowledge, include fans?
Absolutely, yes. And it's been interesting hearing the conversations over the last few days percolating around. And people not in, this has not come from anybody in a position of power, but it has come from those to whom word has filtered down that they're considering the possibility of fans later in the season. Now, when something like this, Tony, starts leaking out, it concerns me. And it concerns me because it feels like we're getting a little too comfortable with ourselves.
Yeah.
And we're getting a little too far ahead of things. Let's get to spring training before we start talking about fans, right? Let's get a better sense of the disease before we start bringing people back into mass gatherings. I just have trouble seeing the very notion of mass gatherings, no matter how much social distancing we can put in between people, no matter if we skip two rows of fans and have people sitting 6 feet apart in those rows. That just seems a bit premature to me at this point. And when I see something like that, it screams pump the brakes.
I get the sense, though, that your expectations, as somebody who covers baseball closely, your expectations are that they will at least start to have a season. They'll try to have a season, yes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think at this point, barring something really bad happening, there will be baseball in 2020. I think the parties, all of the parties involved, are just too motivated not to give it the old college try. And the parties involved here, let's remember, are in the United States of America, a country that tends to deify and treat its very rich very well and give them special privileges. And we have, right now, a sport that makes $10 billion a year with billionaire owners who are bleeding and want to go out and make money. We have very rich and famous players, many more of whom than I think people realize, live paycheck to paycheck, weirdly enough, who are low on money and want to get paid. We have politicians who want baseball to help reopen America and who have the levers to make that happen. And we have medical professionals who understand that as much as we want to be safe, the economy coming to a standstill is a problematic public health issue in and of itself. And to have people who are out there in the limelight going and practicing things like social distancing and being advocates for good public health is only a good thing for the public health community, too. There are too many people in too many positions of power who have too much incentive for baseball to come back for it not to.
All right, so let me get you out of here on this, because you mentioned public health. Peter King said this on this podcast yesterday. He said, I wonder, if you're going to have football and to put on a football game with or without people in the stands, each team needs about 250 personnel, and they're going to have to be tested. They're going to be tested on a regular basis. The last great plan, which was two nights ago, was to test 2% of the American public per month, 2% in each state. That's like nothing. That's absolutely nothing, really. When baseball players play, they're going to have to be tested. We're not stupid here. They're going to have to be tested on a regular basis. Will the American public say to itself, you know what, we'll make this exception for athletes because they charm us and they lead us away from our fears and our reality?
No. I think the American public, though, as long as there are not outbreaks and as long as there are not doctors coming out and sick people coming out saying we can't get testing, I think the American public will not look the other way, but will certainly not have the uproar that it did, say, when NBA players were getting tested en masse after Rudy Gobert tested positive. Serie A is looking to come back, the Italian Soccer League, Tony. And what people over there have suggested is that for every test kit used by somebody involved with the soccer league, the league itself purchases 5 test kits and gives them to public health organizations. I think baseball, basketball, and everybody else involved is going to need to do some sort of similar thing to placate the public and ensure that the league and the sport itself has public health in mind when coming back.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Talking to you is really good. Stay safe. Talk to you soon.
Pleasure is always mine, Tony. Thanks, buddy.
Jeff Passan, boys and girls, we will take a break. We'll come back with email and a jingle. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Just to set the scene again as I go into this read, Dad and I are sitting alone at an appropriate distance at our formal dining room table. This is the underpants read. It's officially spring, which means it's officially spring cleaning time. Yes, that's a thing. And if you're not doing it, you should, especially with your underwear drawer. End your relationship with toxic old tattered undies and move on to a membership with the softest undies to ever grace. To grace. Just grace.
Okay, grace.
A fresh new start for spring. And what's so great when you have the subscription is you start to develop a relationship. You remember just very iconic MeUndies prints. And as they start to cycle out, you lament their loss, but then you look to the spring and you see the new print on your porch. Why would you need an undie membership? Honestly, because it's fun. It's an easy way to give your future self a present each month. A membership with MeUndies is full of perks, like site-wide savings, early access, free shipping, and new ridiculously soft undies delivered to your door each month. Building your undie collection makes your adult life just a tad easier. More undies? Less laundry. It's science. MeUndies are made with micromodal. What's that? It's that magical, sustainable, soft as heck fabric made from trees. Yes, trees. That makes your ... they included the ellipsis, feel like they're floating on a cloud. MeUndies are offered in a range of sizes from extra small to 4XL. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners, forgive, Dad. For Dad's listeners, for any first-time purchasers, you get 50% off and free shipping. This is a no-brainer, especially because they have 100% satisfaction guarantee. I wonder if Chessie's listening. To give your 15% off your first order, free shipping, a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/Tony K. That's MeUndies.com/Tony K.
Very nice read. Turn over your right shoulder and you'll see Chessie sleeping on the couch.
Oh, she woke up.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails back.
That's lovely. That's the Cane Bay High School Choir in South Carolina. It's just lovely. Should I do the readout now? Would you like me to do the readout now? I think so, right?
Sure.
Or would you like me to wait till after the email? I think we'll do it now.
That's it
for today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just remind you that Otis Day and the Knights, Otis, my man, will be playing tonight at the Dexter Lake Club and this Saturday at the Delta House. Thanks to today's guests. Really, really great. Leon Harris and Jeff Passan were great. Thanks as well to the sponsors, MeUndies, Old Spice Hair Products. You know, go figure. And go and see the new podcast hosted by Malcolm Gladwell. Remember that you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. And Nigel, let's thank the people at Bethesda Bagel.
Yes, thanks to Danny and the gang at Bethesda Bagels, 4819 Bethesda Avenue. Open every single day of the week. Open at 7 a.m. To 3 p.m. We thank them for the bagels, the bagel sandwiches. You should stop by and get whatever you need because they've got great stuff. And it's terrific crew over there. So thank you.
From Todd Derry in Orange Village, Ohio. I love listening to your color war story about your plaque. Harkens me back to my days at Camp Robin Hood in New Hampshire, founded in 1927, where my children go now. The best 5 days of the summer were green and white. They were also the most intensive 5 days of the summer and some of the most intense sporting memories of my life. Staff captains of the past would arrive secretly at camp before the break of color war, spend 5 days as judges, walk around camp in hats and canes, and officiated all events from basketball and softball to cracker eating, spelling bee, and all camp relay races. Instead of plaques, each team had a flag they must make. These flags still hang in the dining hall for 40-plus years. We, too, ended each color war with song night, where original lyrics were written to the tune of popular songs. I'm 44 years old. I still remember the words to my songs when I was 9. Truly the best. It's even better now listening to my kids, 10 and 13, tell their green and white stories. My daughter is 0-3, still looking for our first win. One can only hope she gets back this summer to actually attend camp. It's what keeps my kids going all year. As they say, we live 10 for 2. 10 months looking ahead to the 2 months of the summer. The parents agree. If you have the camp experience, there's nothing like it. Chris Allen in Washington, D.C. Did I hear correctly that Michael Wilbon said he was surprised by how difficult it was to talk for a minute and a half straight on your own? Really? This is what finally surprises him? He's been on TV for 20 years on a show that prominently features a clock counting down each segment. Thanks for the distraction during these times. Wilbon, yesterday on our first story on the NBA, I got it back. The bell rang. Wilbon went too full. The bell already rang before I talked. It's unbelievable. Kevin Ely, Mesa, Arizona. Dear Dr. Tony, Grandpa 71, is Fredo Jong-un next in line to rule over North Korea? He can handle things. He's smart. Not like everybody says, like dumb. He's smart and he wants respect. From Michael Flores, I'm a millennial loyal little from Portland, Oregon. First off, a huge thank you to you, Nigel, and the whole gang for recording the show during these times. It's wonderful to hear from you. The reason I'm writing is that on Wednesday, April 24th, you said Bandon Dunes is in Bend, Oregon. I started yelling in my house that you're wrong. Hard to believe, but Bandon Dunes is actually in Bandon, Oregon, a small coastal town on the southern coast in Oregon. Bandon Dunes is 4 hours and 43 minutes, or 256 miles from Bend. Bandon Dunes is 4 hours and 21 minutes, or 257 miles from PDX, Oregon's largest airport in Portland, Oregon. When you and Michael make the trip, let it be known so the littles in the PNW, Pacific Northwest, can suggest different restaurants in the Portland metro area for you to eat before the four-hour trek down south. We can then suggest the best wineries to go to in the famous Willamette Valley, with a specific shout-out to Yamhill County. Tell Michael it rained this morning, and we're expecting more tomorrow. Michael, I'm giving you this so you can get in touch with him. From Ali Jahed, who is a radiologist in St. Catharines. I'm a doctor with an MD and a PhD. My daily routine for years has included listening to this podcast and the PTI podcast during my commute. It's been a true comfort to be able to plug in to my iPhone these last few weeks as I leave my family to go to work at a hospital and hear some familiar voices talking about things other than this crisis. Thank you for giving me a small sense of normal in these times. My last name is pronounced Jawhead, but don't say my name on the air. Of course we say it in the air. Thank you so much for your service to mankind, actually. From Tim Chineka in Kyoto, Japan. Mr. Tony and crew, thanks for keeping things going through the global pandemic. I come to you from Kyoto, Japan, as a child of Binghamton, New York. I finally had my David Aldridge moment this week when Netflix Japan put on The Last Dance and I saw the one and only David Aldridge after years of hearing him only on this podcast. There was also this Wilbon guy, some people named Obama and Clinton, but seeing David for the first time ever was incredible. Now, what does that say about me that I always assumed he was a stocky guy? David was a stocky guy in his youth. David was overweight in his youth, as he'll tell you. I had no idea how thin he is. David looks great. Trying to tell my wife and kids what it meant to me would be pointless, so I had to tell you. Thanks, keep up the good work, and send some speedy marinade from Lupo's or Salamita's next time you visit Binghamton. Can I do one more?
Of course.
You sure? Okay, from Dr. Joe DeRosa. We have so many great emails, and I just don't get to them. Dr. Joe DeRosa in Greenville, South Carolina. This is Dr. Joe DeRosa from Greenville, South Carolina. Yes, that kind of doctor. Having graduated from the Ohio State University College of Medicine, I've been practicing family medicine in Greenville for 20 years. I'm a longtime listener of the podcast. You recently gave a mention to Nate Troyer from Plainfield, Indiana, for turning his friend Rick on to the show, who then sent in music. While I am happy for them in getting their mentions, I'm also insanely jealous of Nate's shout-out, especially considering I am the one who turned him on to the show in the first place. 4 years ago, Nate and I attended a practice round for the Masters. While at Augusta, another friend who works for the Golf Channel gave us a behind-the-scenes tour of the television studios. And who happened to be there but Steve Sands? He politely shook our hands and said, "It's nice to meet you. I'm Steve Sands." I smiled and said, "Oh, I know exactly who you are, Lachiserie." This was in the very early days of the now infamous phrase, before he was used to hearing it everywhere. He turned away laughing and shaking his head and just repeating Lachiserie. Afterwards, Nate said, "What was that all about?" "The Tony Kornheiser Show," I said. "You'd have to be a little to get it." And now he is. Thank you for the years of entertainment, and stay safe. And to all the doctors and the nurses and the people working in grocery stores and everybody at risk, thank you. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I'm going to solve. All right. Corno Curro cabinet.
No. Idiot.
Thank you. be the one. And don't you know that she is out of my league? Besides the fact that I think she's perfect for me. So connection, this could be the one. True affection, looking for someone. I couldn't lie by the look in her eyes I was taken. She took my love, there was nowhere to run.